everybody to the first ever Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast here on Space on Twitter. I am your co-host, Justin C. I am joined today by my co-host, the chairman, Steven Vincent, and we are here to recap everything that's pretty much taken place in the world of pro wrestling over the last week. We've obviously got WrestleMania to talk about. We've got the CM Punk AEW fallout to talk about from this past Wednesday's Dynamite and his interview with Ariel Helwani last week. So just a whole bunch of stuff to get to here. And if you're out there listening and you want to go out there and join us, I'm keeping an eye out here on people listening, and you want to talk to us, just tag us on Twitter. I'll get you in. But I mean, I don't even know where to start with this past weekend. So much stuff just ended up happening. I mean, WrestleMania 40 in of itself, I think two nights were just very good. I mean, I've seen some people say greatest WrestleMania of all time. I don't know if I'm willing to go that far with it yet, but it definitely was a great show, especially night two. This is a night where I think night two outshined night one. And there's just a lot to talk about here, but I guess just, Chairman, your overall thoughts from this past weekend.
It was a very well done show. Two really good nights, especially night two. Night two alone, I felt like, could be an entire premier live event itself. I mean, you just had great stuff from the first night. You know, the second night was really good, too. Like I said, the bell from night two all the way to the end, just great stuff. You know, I think a lot of people are happy with the majority of the results as well. That's up for debate, of course, on every match for every fan. But I thought, you know, a lot of the right people won the majority of the matches, and it was just really good. And you know, yeah, it's like you said, Justin, some people did say this is like the best WrestleMania ever, and that's recency bias. I don't know if I would say that's the best ever. I mean, you had some really good ones over the years. I mean, there's 40 of them all together, but I definitely say it's probably at least, you know, best one, I would say, at least the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think it's better than last year's. I mean, you work backwards from there. I mean, 38 was fine, you know. COVID WrestleMania was weird. You know, the 37 with Austin in it the first night, that was good. But I think, yeah, you're right. Overall, just from an overall perspective, I think this whole show was very good. Like I said, you know, WrestleMania 17 is up there. WrestleMania 19 is up there. I always have a soft spot for WrestleMania 8 myself. I think WrestleMania, you know, 21 isn't bad either. So, yeah, it's one of those things where you have to, if you have the time to go back and watch this stuff and compare back to back, then maybe it's different. But, yeah, because I comfortably say out of the 40 WrestleManias, it would be top 10. I would say it maybe cracks the top 5. I think it would be very hard to keep it out. But, yeah, it's definitely a recency bias thing for now. But obviously the big story coming out of WrestleMania and everything from this past week is Cody Rhodes finally finishing his story and becoming WWE Universal Champion, WWE Champion, whatever they call it now. And pretty much what everybody kind of talked about and what we talked about in our preview show last week, like endgame fashion with, you know, basically Cody's Avengers coming out to take out the Bloodline, except it was The Undertaker coming out to chokeslam The Rock instead of Stone Cold Steve Austin, which it still kind of surprises me, especially when you figure even up to like the day of. I remember Triple H sending out some kind of tweet at about the match, and he sent it out at 3:16 p.m. Eastern time. It's like, oh, come on. That's clearly such a tease for them to bring back Stone Cold. It didn't happen, but it's fine. You know, it's one of those things where people want to go after the wrestling and not having it be, you know, a great wrestling match, but it's the thing people like. When you look at casuals for pro wrestling, we'll get into this when we talk about AEW later. The casuals that watch that show that I saw on my Twitter timeline who never talk about wrestling loved it. And they thought it was great seeing appearances from The Undertaker and seeing John Cena and his bald spot come back. You know, and in the end, those were cameos. And I've seen people saying it distracts from Cody. It didn't. What is everybody's talking about the cool appearances, but at the same time, everybody knows, you know, at the end of the night, it was about Cody Rhodes, and they had the WrestleMania 10, like, finish there where you had all the baby faces come out, lift Cody out of his shoulders. It was a great moment for him. You know, great to see a guy like him finally get to the top of the mountain, being a main eventer. I've seen the criticism of, Cody's just a mid-carder in a main event WWE body. And it's like, no, it's not. Cody is not fake. He's not phony. He's everything you want in a top babyface. He's a great representation of your company, and he deserves to be at the spot that he is. And it'll be interesting to see what his next feud is now, considering that The Rock is going to be gone for a little bit. We don't know what's next with Roman Reigns. We've got the draft coming up, so maybe Cody will be on either Raw or SmackDown. But it was a great weekend for Cody Rhodes, and something he's deserved since he came back to the WWE and get this moment and kind of get up there and proclaim this is, you know, as you were saying all weekend, this is a Triple H era. But it's also the Cody era too, and, you know, getting Triple H's endorsement, getting Nick Khan's endorsement. So, I mean, Chairman, your thoughts on Cody's weekend here of him finally getting to the top?
I was happy for Cody. I'm a Cody fan. I mean, you hear all the great stories and all the great things he does outside of the ring. The WWE needed that babyface poster child that the fans can get behind, and I think they finally found one in Cody Rhodes. They tried it with Roman to be the face guy, but he didn't work as a face. The fans rejected it. What he ended up doing was becoming the biggest heel probably in the last decade. So, you know, kudos for Roman's work. You know, he put in a lot of work in the Bloodline story, and, you know, him and Cody, you know, they are great rivals. You know, it's hard to do 2 years back-to-back WrestleMania with the same two guys and it be really good, and they found a way to get there and make it great. You know, the last match was a lot of fun. You know, it's Bloodline rules, so you knew it was going to be a bunch of chaos. You know, Jimmy Uso was getting involved. Jey Uso, you know, nullified his threat. You know, Solo Sikoa was getting involved. And then, lo and behold, John Cena shows up with that bald spot. Bud, you got to let that go. Just embrace the baldness, man. It's fine. Trust me. Just let it go, John. And, you know, we'll talk about John Cena later, I'm sure. But, you know, with his future. But then it's like, you know, you had the Shield music playing with Seth Rollins coming out. You had just all kinds of cool stuff happen. And, you know, of course, the Final Boss came out. The Undertaker came out. And, yeah, you like you said, Justin, about the Stone Cold stuff. But, you know, it's kind of fun to have a surprise. Like, Undertaker showing up, I was like, holy shit, did not see that coming. But then, you know, you look over the years, and the Undertaker's had so many feuds with so many people of the Bloodline. You know, going back to Yokozuna, going back to Rikishi. I mean, he's had interactions with a lot of those players. You know, he's had interactions with The Rock over the years. So it only made sense in a strange way for The Undertaker to get involved. And it's his first, you know, public appearance in a couple years now. So it's just great stuff for The Undertaker and, you know, keep him in the spotlight. And, you know, the Seth Rollins story, I mean, we'll talk probably more about Seth Rollins when we break that more of the card down. But there's a lot of positive things I want to say about him when we get there. But right now I want to talk about Cody Rhodes, a phenomenal choice as champion, the right guy to break the reign. And, of course, a lot of people in the internet, you're like, oh, people are going to turn on Cody now because he's the champion and blah, blah, blah. And I think Cody is smart enough. I think he can keep himself relevant. The story is, quote, unquote, finished, but it's just one chapter. The Rock opened up another chapter on Raw this past week. He's, like you said, Backlash is coming up in France. Who's going to step up? So there is a lot of stuff to go here if Cody Rhodes is champion. The first chapter is over, but the whole story is definitely not over.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know the Rhodes family, if you're Dusty Rhodes, you know the money's in the chase when it, instead of being champion, but I think that's different with Cody. I mean, we've seen with Triple H and the Triple H era that, you know, long champions are a thing here. And, you know, we've had long reigns of pretty much everybody in every championship. So it's, I don't see Cody losing it anytime soon. You know, he's probably going to get at minimum, probably longer, but at minimum till SummerSlam for it. And like you said, it's just a good story for him. It's the first chapter. You know, maybe the Roman Reigns rematch takes place somewhere down the line. But it was a great finish for his story, I think, overall. And like you said, yeah, I don't think the crowd is going to – he's going to lose the crowd at all going forward. I think it's something that, you know, the crowd is sticking with him. If he sticks with the same character, don't be like John Cena where the crowd was behind John Cena leading up to him winning his first championship, but then the WWE changed him. You're not going to see that this time with Cody Rhodes at all. You know, you bring up Seth Rollins. We can just go right over now to the Seth Rollins World Heavyweight title portion of the WrestleMania card. I mean, we had Seth fight on night one, lose obviously in the tag match against The Rock and Roman Reigns. And then he opens night two, taking on Drew McIntyre in a pretty much what seemed like a spam finisher mess, where these guys are just going out there throwing finisher after finisher, ending with Drew McIntyre winning the World Heavyweight title, but then going to Drew being too distracted with CM Punk there being on ringside commentary and having to go get in CM Punk's face after the match and brag and finally pushing Punk to the point where he ended up attacking Drew McIntyre. And then lo and behold, out comes Damian Priest to cash in his Money in the Bank contract and win the World Heavyweight title, which was surprising for me. I mean, I didn't see it coming. Obviously, we knew Damian Priest's Money in the Bank contract was coming due soon. I mean, well, quote-unquote soon. You know, it was April, so it's May, June, July, 3 months. If they believe the rule is he has a year to cash in. But he ends up doing it. And now Damian Priest is World Heavyweight Champion. Drew McIntyre is pissed off that he had his moment and had it taken away from him. And we still have the CM Punk-Drew McIntyre feud just ready to go whenever CM Punk is finally clear to come back. But at this moment, we've got Damian Priest as world champ. We've got Seth Rollins likely taking some time off. I mean, if you looked at how he, you know, if it was just really good selling or not, but he looked like he was struggling to get into the ring with Cody Rhodes after that. And, you know, Cody, quote unquote, being being Cody's shield, like he said he was going to, and distracting Roman Reigns to, you know, take his eye off Cody and hit Seth with the chair rather than Cody, which led to Cody being able to hit his finishers three crossroads to win. But, I mean, Chairman, you're a big Seth Rollins guy. I know you probably got a lot to say about that in the World Heavyweight title picture, so I'm just going to let you go.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of layers just in that first match, or second match, maybe if you want to call it technically, alone for night two of WrestleMania between Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, CM Punk, and the unexpected Damian Priest. We'll start with Seth Rollins. Everybody knows he's my boy. We're both Iowa boys. And, you know, it sucked to see him lose the title, but injuries catch up to you. That dude is a workhorse. He calls it the workhorse championship. You can't take nothing away from that. And, you know, he put Drew McIntyre over. You know, whether his feud of Roman Reigns kind of sideswiped him, you know, Drew kept, you know, saying, you know, you got to focus on me. And, you know, Seth was trying to fight multiple battles. You know, he tried to help Cody. He tried to fight the Bloodline. But he also had to defend his title, the Workhorse Championship, against Drew McIntyre. And it almost seemed like the dude was just literally putting the company on his back or his knee, and just it just started to crumble on him. And unfortunately, the reign is over. Seth seemed very emotional when he left the ring after, you know, Drew beat him. And he pretty much told Drew he deserved it, you know. And we don't know what Seth's future is. Is he taking time off for injury? People are always saying his contract's up in a couple months. I think he's WWE life for myself, but, you know, it's just, you know, there's so much unknown in wrestling. And then we'll talk about Drew McIntyre, you know, just hypocritical for calling Seth out for focusing in on the Bloodline. But here, yeah, Drew McIntyre obsessed with CM Punk to the point it literally distracted him and cost him the championship. Drew McIntyre, we talked about time and time again, phenomenal job the last several months. You know, his social media game is on par with anybody right now. Dude tweeted at ringside during his championship match against CM Punk. Like, that's just how he is. It's how he's rolling. The stuff CM Punk is top-notch. I cannot wait for CM Punk to get cleared. Drew McIntyre apparently hasn't re-signed yet, but let's be real. He's re-signing. It's just a game they're playing right now, dollars and cents, whatever. You're not going to invest this much into Drew McIntyre into a giant feud of CM Punk down the road if they're not going to have a payoff. This is happening. It's just a matter of when. We're hoping SummerSlam, honestly. But, you know, we figured, okay, Drew and CM Punk would fight for the title. But CM Punk kind of threw a curveball there when he screwed Drew out of the title. Here comes Damian Priest, like you said. Did not expect that cash-in to happen at all. And it's just so much happened in that sequence, you know, from Seth losing to Drew winning to taunting Punk, Punk taking him out, and then the cash-in. And, like, it was just so much happened in literally, like, a few minutes span. Like, it was a lot to take in, but it's WrestleMania, and that's awesome. And, you know, we're all Damian Priest fans here. We're happy for the guy. You know, he gets his flowers, you know. Everybody's happy for the guy. You know, I almost wish he would have did a shot, though, backstage in a hot tub like he did when he won the NXT No Freaking title. But we'll take what he had. So Damian Priest is the face of Raw now. Drew and CM Punk got unfinished business, and it's just a lot of great stuff going on right now.
Yeah, instead you got Damian Priest. I don't know if it was, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday at a Yankees game with, I think I saw a picture of him with Aaron Judge and maybe a couple other Yankees. So he went corporate now. He doesn't get any more pictures with in the hot tub. Now he's got to hang out with professional athletes like that. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. Like you said, it was interesting. Didn't expect it at all. And, you know, Damian Priest now looks like, was it Jey Uso is going to be his first opponent, I think, for the world title. So, you know, Drew McIntyre, and like you said, they invested so much. You do not put somebody in a big time world title match like that at WrestleMania in this day and age if you don't plan on re-signing him and having him, you know, be around in your company forever so you can go ahead and continue to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I look forward to the Drew Punk feud. At least to see how long they keep the title on Damian Priest. I mean, is he keeping it warm until Drew McIntyre or until CM Punk is ready, and you go to Drew winning it, and then go to Drew and Seth? I mean, you know, you look at something like a Money in the Bank, where, you know, we always say those big pay per views like that, where you have your special attractions like a Money in the Bank match or a Royal Rumble match. You can do title matches there, like a Damian Priest versus Drew McIntyre, and be okay with it. There's no issue with that. And like you said, with Seth Rollins, how long does that keep going as far as, you know, him taking time off? I think we feel that he's definitely taking some time off. We just don't know how much. But that guy's been a workhorse forever since coming back from his last knee injury. I think it's time, perfectly fine for him to take some time off, even if it's just for his character, to refresh it, rejuvenate it, and come back, you know, a little bit different when he does. So that's the top two title situations.
Well, hold up. Before we move on. Well, here's a scenario I pointed out the other day on X. We saw Drew McIntyre lose his championship to Damian Priest, so a cash-in. Money in the Bank's coming up in a couple months here. What if Drew McIntyre wins the Money in the Bank briefcase this year and cashes on Damian Priest? I don't think it's ever been done before where someone's cashing a briefcase to win their title back, has it?
Ooh, off the top of my head, nothing comes to mind. Just racking through briefcase winners. Nothing, yeah, no, nothing really comes to my mind as far as that goes. So that would be an interesting little scenario to play out there by having some, yeah, I like that. It's a good idea. You know, it gives Damian Priest a respectable, you know, 3-4 month reign there, which shouldn't be a problem. I mean, we like Damian Priest more than most, like we both said, but it's also at the same time we recognize he's not a long-term 6-plus month champion, I don't think, even with Triple H being a fan of him. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's a good scenario to throw out there for potential Money in the Bank cash-ins and winners looking forward. So that's the men's side of things. Then we look over to the women's side of things, where we had Rhea and Becky open up WrestleMania Night 1 on Saturday. That saw Rhea retain the title, which we all predicted going into it. I mean, we like Becky, but we all know that Rhea is just on another level right now. And I don't think Becky was the right choice to take the title off of Rhea. I mean, I think in a situation like that, you're looking at somebody like a Bianca Belair, which we've teased before we've thrown out there before as far as ideas for, you know, a potential WrestleMania matches. Then obviously they're pushing Jade Cargill, who had a great showing at WrestleMania, as well as somebody that I think you could look at and they could take the title off of Rhea too down the line. But I think Rhea's I would not be surprised if Rhea almost even has a Roman Reigns like reign with the women's title. I don't know if she'll go as long as Roman, but I could see her at this point pretty much holding it until WrestleMania next year. And then over on the SmackDown side of things, night two, we had Bayley defeat Io Shirai to become champion. I was really glad to see the crowd fully behind Bayley like they were. It's one of those things where I thought, like, it's in a bit of a weird position as far as the match on the card, and it was like the program was getting attention, but how much are they actually going to be behind Bayley? And then, thankfully enough, the crowd was 100% behind her, 100% into the match, even with it being right before the Cody match. They were there for Bayley. They wanted to see it happen, and they ended up getting it. And it was just a smart move by WWE, giving Bayley her big moment like that, and let her hopefully hold on to this title going forward and establish herself as a top, you know, babyface, but not the huggable Bayley character like we're used to seeing from her as a top babyface. So, Chairman, what's your thoughts on the women's division's matches and the state of it going forward?
So, WrestleMania Night 1, I had to miss the Rhea Becky match because I had some stuff going on. So I tuned in for the tag team match. So I had to literally stay away from social media. I had to dance around eggshells and rewatch night one, you know, opening match the next morning for replay. And then when I saw Motionless and White playing for Rhea Ripley's entrance, I was like, yes, the rumors were true. I was super excited because I'm a huge Motionless and White fan. Obviously, Rhea Ripley is. So that was a cool moment for her. I thought Becky had a great attire with some quotes from her book on her. And, you know, big match Becky, Rhea, you know, they tore the house down. Great opener for WrestleMania. You know, the rivalry has been really good. You know, both women knew what they had to do to start the show. Then, you know, Becky lost, and we speculated that Becky and Seth probably going on hiatus for a while. Becky's contract is also up for discussion, apparently. So whether she just does mom things, book tours, whatever, she's probably going to be out of the game for a while. Rhea is dominant. I don't know what the plan is, you know, for her next as far as, like, challengers goes. But, yeah, I mean, she could easily go all the way into WrestleMania 41 as champion. And I got no problem with that as long as it keeps fresh and dominant. And then you go to the other side of the game. Bayley, you know, she's fresh off the babyface turn. Io Sky needed to drop the title. It did not do her real good justice have being a champion. She feels kind of just like a lackey, unfortunately, kind of, you know, compared to Dakota and the Kabuki Warriors. Like, she's just there, and it sucks because she's a fantastic talent. But she doesn't really have a whole lot of the charisma. I mean, her in-ring ability is charisma, but she can't really cut promos, unfortunately, and they don't really just – not her thing. And Bayley's obviously back to being a baby face. Bayley's a fantastic face. We've seen her face runs over the years. She's a great character. You know, she's a great person to, you know, get behind the fans. So I think she could have a really good title run. I'm really just curious to see if we do get a Bayley Bianca feud down the road, since Bianca's still a little bitter from Bayley kind of screwing her over years ago. So that is definitely my pick to watch to happen sometime this summer.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with Bianca not always willing to help Bayley earlier. So, yeah, I'm glad that, you know, Bayley definitely deserves this moment at the top, because she's kind of, you know, people see Becky as a star, people see Charlotte as a star, people see Sasha, Mercedes, Moné, they've always seen her as a star. And Bayley, of all the four horsewomen, has kind of been like the one that you kind of think never really got the top push that she deserved, probably because they might, you know, the previous regime may not have seen her as somebody that could, you know, be the top woman in a division going forward. Yeah, she definitely had her time with Sasha during the COVID era, but, you know, she never really got the full-on top woman position like she has right now on a brand. And I think Bayley's going to be able to run with it. You know, she's a veteran. She's more of a veteran now than she was before, obviously, when she got her first run, when she first came up. I think she can adapt well. I think her in-ring work is good. You know, I've seen people say, you know, Io carried Bayley to the match of her life. That's not what I saw. I thought Bayley did well in her position there, and there's no reason to take anything away from her as far as her performance goes in that match itself. We also looked at, you know, another, I think, probably at least for me, the most surprising result of the weekend being that Sami Zayn being the one to dethrone Gunther at 666 days and beat him for the Intercontinental Championship at night one. It was a great match. I think the Intercontinental match last year was better, but, you know, it was a match that Gunther strictly dominated pretty much throughout the whole thing. And, you know, Gunther's out there kind of, you know, teasing, trash talking, whatever you want to say to Sammy's wife. Sammy gets like an adrenaline rush and starts to get going. And, you know, it seems like Gunther's downfall is him, you know, trying to just completely dominate somebody, and it gets the better of him. And Sami Zayn is able to come back and win the match, which is very surprising to me. And we talked about it in our preview show that we didn't think Sami Zayn was the guy to dethrone Gunther and win the Intercontinental title. And now here we are with him being that guy. And I'll let you go first here on Chairman. What were your thoughts when you saw the Gunther's dethroning?
I was surprised. I was so surprised. But Sami had a pretty cool entrance, though. That's like the new production things have been the last few, you know, while now. But, like, you know, he's backstage with his family. They showed him walk to the ring. And right before he goes out there, you got KO, getting him all pumped up. And then, you know, you see Sami walk to the stage. They hit the music. And I thought that was a really cool production feature that they did. I mean, it just goes to show you that without Bucktooth Beaver Kevin Dunn around, things are just getting better and better. So I thought that was a cool thing they did for Sammy. And you know, it's like you said, Justin, Gunther just punked his ass the whole match. And then all of a sudden, Sammy just went crazy and hit some big moves. And that was enough to put Gunther down. And I was like, oh, boy, I did not see that coming. And then I seen that Gunther had a title reign of 666 days. I'm like, oh, Triple H probably saw that. And I was like, oh, that's a good number to end on. So Gunther will be etched in history at 666. You know, I don't even know what's next for Gunther. I don't even think he was on Raw this week. So now we speculate, is he perhaps next in line for a potential Royal Championship match, whether it be against Damian Priest or Cody? Because, I mean, there's no way he's going back for the Intercontinental title. I think he's graduated from that. And Sami Zayn, you know, he should be a solid Intercontinental champion. Obviously, there's probably going to be some dissension between him and Chad Gable. I think they're fighting next week, actually, on Raw for the title. So that will probably start a heel turn for somebody. So that's where the Intercontinental Championship stands right now.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens next with Gunther, too. He wasn't on Raw. You know, do they go right to – do they kind of hold off for anything with him to the draft? Do they hold off on a Gunther – I feel like he'll probably try to get his Intercontinental title back, but then I look right into the problem of, do I really want to see Gunther pinned again if he's going for Cody at SummerSlam or at the show in Germany somewhere down the line? He's definitely, I think, a guy that's going to be very well protected in Triple H's WWE. I think he's a guy that was a main eventer going forward. You know, it sucks, you know, because of what Brock Lesnar did, that we didn't get a Brock Lesnar-Gunther match this WrestleMania, which probably would have been awesome. But obviously, I understand the circumstances there and not putting Brock Lesnar in that situation and taking him off TV. But he's definitely a star, and I think he deserves a big spotlight going into 2024, whether it's going after Cody or Damian Priest, going back after the Intercontinental title. He's going to be a guy that's going to be at the top of the WWE for quite a long time, I think. And he definitely deserves it from how he's, you know, he was already great when he came into the WWE, you know, from his time on the Indies and the UK, NXT UK scene. But just the way he's, you know, adapted, moved over to the States, on how after we thought he was done after that one Survivor Series a few years ago when he got nothing in. Good for Gunther. He deserves his time at the spot, time at the top, excuse me, when that's coming, assuming it's coming in 2024. We also had, as far as the mid-card scene goes, we had Logan Paul retain his United States Championship in a match against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. Another good match, another good showing from Logan Paul. I mean, this guy, I think, deserves all the praise in the world for doing what he does in the ring in the short time span that he's been a wrestler. And I'm curious to see what's next for him, too, as far as keeping the U.S. title. You know, is he going to be around more? Is he going to be around defending it more? I'm sure he's going to be on the next Saudi show when it's coming, I think, in May or April. I don't know when it's coming. I know it's coming soon. But I was surprised. I was personally surprised to see him retain it. I thought for sure they were going to give it to Kevin Owens. But they keep it on Logan Paul, which I don't really have any problem with. What were your thoughts on that one, Chairman?
Yeah, that match was actually really good. The entrance was hilarious when Kevin Owens is driving in on a cart. He's like halfway down or whatever, and then he hears Randy's music. He backs up, and he picks up Randy Orton, and they drive to the center of the ring. And for a while, they were friendly. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, we got to do this on. And then they start just beating the crap out of each other. So I thought that was good. I love those two together. I kind of hope they kind of keep their tag team energy going, honestly. We talked about how Randy Orton's body's kind of breaking down. You know, he's got a lot of miles on him. That was Kevin Owens, honestly. And I think he was hitting that he's only got a couple of WrestleManias left himself. So, honestly, KO and RKO could be a tag team for a while. Keep him fresh for a little bit longer. I'm all for it, honestly. Logan Paul. He's bringing randos in the Prime bottles. I have no idea who the hell the actual speed is. Randy Orton punked his ass, so I was all for that. And I am really curious to see if we finally get that LA Knight Logan Paul U.S. title match that we've literally been thinking about happening for months now. Maybe it's happening sometime going forward. I don't know, but that's where we're at with those guys.
Yeah, apparently iShow Speed is some popular YouTube, TikTok downloader. I don't know. But apparently he's pretty cool with the teenage crowd, and I'm about 20 years past that. So I guess that's probably why I annoyed you who he was. And apparently, you know, he's this big famous star now. But, yeah, you got me on that one. Just looking at the rest of the WrestleMania card as we just kind of finish up here as far as WrestleMania goes, the matches we didn't talk about, they did end up splitting the tag team titles, which is something that we had heard rumored going into the show, and that's what they did end up doing. I mean, it was pretty obvious once you saw the actual setup for the ladder match that was going to be it. You had Austin Theory and Grayson Waller win the set of SmackDown tag titles, and then you had R-Truth and Miz win the Raw tag team titles. So those are split up there. Like we said, good for R-Truth, good for, you know, him being able to finally, you know, at 50 years old, getting a cool WrestleMania moment like that. We had Rey Mysterio and Andrade beat Santos Escobar and Dom Mysterio with the help of Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson, I believe, was the other Eagles offensive lineman there. The match that I think we might all agree was probably the most disappointing, Jey Uso beating Jimmy Uso. I expected a lot more from that match, and it pretty much just turned into super kick after super kick after super kick, and just kind of fell flat. I have no idea what happened with that match. It was just very weird. We briefly touched on Jade, Bianca, and Naomi winning their six women, so we're good there. We had The Pride beat The Final Testament, and LA Knight beat AJ Styles, and probably LA Knight's biggest win so far in the WWE. And hopefully, like you said, maybe we finally get that LA Knight Logan Paul match at SummerSlam. Who knows? But some thoughts, Chairman, on any of those matches that I mentioned there?
Not too many. I mean, they're kind of undercard matches, fill the card matches. No one, myself personally, I didn't really get too much into those matches. I mean, Andrade being a substitute for Dragon Lee ruined my prediction of Dom and Escobar winning, because if I knew Andrade would have been there, that would have changed my prediction, because, like, no way Andrade is going to lose, right? I mean, the six-woman tag, I think they got their time cut. You know, it just seemed kind of weird that Bianca and Jay Naomi only got, like, 8 minutes, if that. You know, Jimmy and Jay, like you said, was disappointing. Just expect a little more out of those guys. It just goes to tell you how much, like, Jimmy Uso has really fallen. It's just, like, he lost that match. He's just a henchman for the Bloodline. And Jay is, like, the king of the Yeet movement. And he has a title match coming up against Damian Priest. Like, it's insane to me, like, how different those guys are being booked right now or handled. Whatever. The Pride in Final Testament shouldn't even made the WrestleMania card. It's like I said, Street Profits should have been that tag title ladder match. And Bobby Lashley could have been part of the U.S. title match, but whatever. And LA Knight beat AJ Styles, and AJ Styles is another guy that's probably only got a couple of WrestleManias left in him. So he said it himself, he's winding down. So another legend of 20-plus years, probably not too many matches left. So we'll see how AJ Styles does in his remaining years.
Yeah, hopefully maybe it's a situation where AJ's been saving himself for one big final run like this to go out. He's 46 years old. It's weird. 46 years old, and you think about going back to watching him in, like, TNA when TNA was first a thing around. It's amazing how much he's aged. Even now, I don't think 46. I would have maybe pegged him in his early 40s, but I would not have pegged him at 46. Yeah, but I hope he gets a good singles run going forward, if he's probably got only another year or two left as far as being the main person there in the WWE. But yeah, a very solid WrestleMania, like we talked about. A very positive one, I think, too. It was a good stepping point for the WWE, a launch point for them. I thought it was very good. The follow-up after Raw, we had Roxanne Perez show up. We had Ilya Dragunov show up. They've been talking about the draft going forward. It's at the end of the month, so we'll have that to look forward to as far as who ends up going where. So that's a positive there. A lot to like about the WWE going forward, I think. Wouldn't you agree, Chairman, even with The Rock and leaving now for a little bit and Roman gone too?
Yeah, I mean, I think, after WrestleMania, there's usually like a big reset, you know. You have a lot of new champions. I mean, I think the only ones that retained were Rhea and Logan Paul. So a lot of new champions. So a lot of new stories. You know, like you said before, you know, we had Dragunov show up. You had Roxanne show up, hinting at the draft coming up in a couple weeks. So I'll be curious to see who ends up on Raw, who ends up on SmackDown, who goes to NXT or vice versa. So that's always an exciting time of year. And just kind of setting up things. I mean, I think they did a really good job setting up Rock and Cody for the future. You know, the Final Boss was a good run. You know, elevated everybody around them. You know, I'm kind of hoping maybe we do that at SummerSlam. Some people think WrestleMania next year, but I think you're probably saving that for Rock and Roman myself, the match that was technically slated for this past year. But, I mean, you could be in for a hell of a SummerSlam, honestly. If you do Cody versus The Rock, you could do Roman versus Seth, and you could do Drew versus CM Punk. You know, if all the stars align the right way, you could have one hell of a fucking SummerSlam this year, those three matches alone. And then you could throw in a lot of other great matches, too. SummerSlam could be just as big as WrestleMania if we get a card like that. But that remains to be seen. But, you know, we do have some big events coming up. You know, Backlash in France, you know, their first premier live event. So be curious to see how our card fills up. You know, Money in the Bank's coming up down the road. You got Berlin's got a show coming up. They just announced Clash at the Castle in Scotland. So a lot of international premier live events. So they are definitely going global. They are doing it again this year. This is where I think last year there's a lot of international shows. So they are growing their brand. It's just going to be really hard to figure out when all these damn shows start. I used to be a simple folk, you know, when the shows would start at, you know, 6, 7, you know. Now they're just all over the place.
Yeah, I'm with you as far as that goes. And I would love to see a SummerSlam card like that, mostly because it's in Cleveland. And I would say there's about a 75 to 80% chance that I'm going to end up going to it. So I'm very much would appreciate a big SummerSlam card like that to see in person, especially because it would then make up for the fact that I'd have to be in Cleveland for a couple days. All right. So that is the WWE WrestleMania side of things. And of course, AEW had to go and try to steal some thunder from WWE this past weekend, where after CM Punk did his interview with Ariel Helwani describing the describing what happened backstage with Jack Perry at All In, they decided to go and say, hey, you know what? We're going to release the footage just Wednesday on Dynamite of the backstage fight. The Young Bucks are going to talk about it. And, you know, people thinking it was going to be a fake, people thinking that it was going to be some kind of heel Young Bucks thing. And then they turned out to actually air the footage. And then it pretty much vindicated everything that CM Punk said. I mean, he kind of put him in a chokehold. It got broken up real quick. Punk pie-faced them when they were getting pulled apart. And I don't know. I didn't think it was a good idea to show the footage even to start, because it's going to focus on CM Punk and he is not in your company anymore. So it was a lose-lose for AEW either way. And it turned into a bigger lose-lose than I thought it would. I mean, I've seen AEW already trying to file copyright claims to get the footage taken down. You heard CM Punk chants this past Wednesday on Dynamite during the Okada Young Bucks match, which isn't something you want to hear if you're Tony Khan and AEW. I know it's just in the footage where Tony Khan feared for his life, but I mean, it's just a bad look. And it's, you know, and like I said before, you're going to have the anti-CM Punk people are going to be anti-CM Punk no matter what. They're always going to take AEW or Tony Khan or whoever's against CM Punk's side. I've seen people say like, oh, you know, well, that's not a way to escalate something. You don't escalate something like that. And, you know, you don't escalate from words to violence. Like, you have no idea what Jack Perry said. If Jack Perry did say do something about it, then guess what? Punk did something about it. And Tony Khan's sitting right there. You could have de-escalated it at any time. There's points in the video where you can see Punk looking over to Tony Khan and Khan not doing anything. It's just a bad look overall for AEW. And then seeing people online freak out, and wrestling forums that I know, seeing them freak out against people, you know, who are signing with Punk. And it's just ridiculous that it's broken down to this point where we can't just say, hey, take the L for AEW and Tony Khan. And like CM Punk, who somebody everybody calls a con man and a con artist, is vindicated. And now we have to kind of backpedal and try to find new ways to be against CM Punk here. But it's just laughable from AEW standards. And even you have Will Ospreay take a shot at Triple H that made it seem like Renee Paquette look, you know, a little uncomfortable. Just like Tony Schiavone looked like, what the fuck are we doing here after they aired that footage? Just a giant mess. And I wish Cam could have joined us. I know he had a lot to say about it, but he had something come up, unfortunately. But I'm sure you have a lot to talk about it too, Chairman. Just what were your thoughts about this whole situation as it developed?
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Where do I start? That video footage, the second I saw that announced, I just laughed. I'm like, we are seriously that petty to try to steal Thunder from WrestleMania. Because, like, you know, you're not just airing this on a random Wednesday Dynamite. You're picking the Wednesday after WrestleMania. And maybe it's in retaliation for the CM Punk interview, whatever. But you guys are picking a bad time to try to drag the WWE. You guys just look petty. You look foolish. Like, do better. Like, I saw the footage. I saw the videos. And I'm like, there's no audio. And this literally is everything CM Punk already said. He literally pie-faced Jackass Perry and whatever. I mean, Tony Khan feared for his life for that. Okay. I don't know. That was just whatever. I mean, Samoa Joe, you know, had to be, I mean, it's just a poor guy. He got stuck in all that. But, yeah, I mean, the Bucks can say they used that to escalate their feud with FTR, but we all know that they did that just to try to make Punk look bad. And no one's going to change their mind. It's like you said, you know, you're a Punk fan, WWE fan, or you're an AEW fan, or a Bucks fan. I mean, everyone, it's a divided line. Like, this line's not going to change somebody's mind. You know, you're not going to be like, oh, I changed my mind on CM Punk or AEW. No. You have a bias built up already. So, before you saw the footage. As far as Will Ospreay goes, that whole thing's just funny. Like, Triple H never said anybody's name in particular. He never said a promotion in particular. He just said, you know, if you're not willing to put in the work, you know, we don't want these guys. So apparently someone took offense and burned pretty much every bridge possible of getting into the WWE someday. Like, you know, hopefully for Will Ospreay, AEW is around for the long haul. But, you know, the way Tony Khan's booking things and doing things for right now, who freaking knows if this company's going to be around for the long haul. I mean, Tony Schiavone stood knee-deep in the WCW shitstorm, so he'd be the first to know if it's just the sink. So, I don't know. I don't know what to think right now. Like, Dynamite's unwatchable, Collision's unwatchable, Rampage is unwatchable. I don't watch AEW. I don't pay $50 for pay-per-views. You know, maybe if they got into a streaming service, you know, sure, I'd subscribe and watch it. You know, there's a million of them out there nowadays. But $50 out of my pocket to watch their freaking 5-star Dave Meltzer fest, like, it ain't it, bro. Like, you guys don't have no stories. You guys have no character development. No one gives two shits about John Moxley anymore. Like, y'all just, you are what you are.
Yeah, I mean, listen, AEW puts on good matches. I'm not going to deny that. But as we saw from the interaction of WrestleMania this weekend, you know, it can only take you so far. You know, I'm not going to complain about good wrestling. It's good to great wrestling. I never will. You know, I am a wrestling fan through and through, but I enjoy different forms of entertainment in my wrestling where, you know, WWE does, AEW has better matches than WWE, maybe, but WWE is just, like, does a better job telling the story. And I remember seeing, you know, I think it was Becky Lynch who said, or I think it was Becky Lynch who said, you know, the story is more important than the rest, if the wrestling is next. And it's like, she's kind of right where the story brings you into the wrestling match. Like, yes, I know Will Ospreay is going to fight Claudio this coming Wednesday on Dynamite. It's going to be a great match. Absolutely. No problem with that. But what's, you know, how am I supposed to be invested in this other than say, oh, it's good wrestling? You want to get more people involved. You got to invest in the story too. So that's what AEW needs to do as far as getting more people invested like that. I mean, I haven't watched Dynamite in a while because I bowl on Wednesdays. My bowling league's over now. So guess what? I might be able to actually watch Dynamite live on Wednesdays now and give more of a hopefully insightful thoughts on it. And I hope so, because next week on our show, we're going to be probably previewing AEW Dynasty, the pay-per-view taking place on the 21st. So we hope you enjoyed our first live Twitter stream here. If it's a success, we may look to do it again in the future. Chairman and I both enjoyed it. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, like I said, talking about AEW Dynasty and talking about whatever else happens in the world of pro wrestling. So for my co-host, Chairman Steven Vincent, Justin C. signing off. We hope you enjoyed the first ever PW Mania Hot Tag Wrestling podcast live here on Twitter. And we'll talk to you guys next week.